here on your National Public Radio News Station in South Florida, 91.3 WLRN, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and the Florida Keys, and live on the internet at WLRN.org.
WLRN Public Radio presents Topical Currents. The development of Florida, especially South Florida, hinged on railroads. Henry Flagler's Florida East Coast Railroad chugged into Miami in 1896, and it was completed to Key West in 1912. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper here. Today's program begins with an audio tour of the Gold Coast Railroad Museum provided by WLRN Herald reporter Michael Hiblin. Also today, we meet the new friends of WLRN Executive Director Rick Lewis, who's been associated with the public radio system for more than 30 years, including being the Deputy Director of NPR News, Minnesota Public Radio News, and even a stint as Executive Producer of NPR's acclaimed All Things Considered. Stay with us. Topical Currents chugs away in a few minutes after this update from NPR News.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. For the first time ever, a privately developed and financed space plane has made a successful manned flight out of Earth's atmosphere.
Available at NPR.org.
And we return 6 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. South Florida has a long and rich railroad history. In fact, the city of Miami came close to being called Flagler in honor of the man who brought the first trains here in 1896. By 1912, the Florida East Coast Railroad extended to Key West along the spectacular Overseas Railroad. Almost half a century ago, as railroads were experiencing dramatic changes, the Gold Coast Railroad Museum was founded in southwest Dade County to preserve the relics of a bygone era. WLRN Herald reporter Michael Hiblin recently visited the museum and takes us along for the ride. All aboard.
On grounds beside Metro Zoo, a large train shed protects most of the rail cars.
We have almost 50 different types of trains and engines here at the Gold Coast Railroad Museum at the Metro Zoo. We have two old steam engines that actually used to pull some of the cars down to Key West on the old Flagler Railroad. We have the presidential car, Ferdinand Magellan, that served Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Dwight Eisenhower. That was kind of like the Air Force One of the railroad tracks in those days. And we have the California Zephyr here that I think has actually been now in Florida almost longer than it went from Chicago to California, but that's quite a unique train. And we have trains that we rent out for events, birthday parties. We give train rides on weekends, different types of train rides up in the cabs of our diesels and a narrow gauge train.
Michael Hall is president of the museum, which was built on the grounds of the former Naval Air Station Richmond.
We're always restoring railroad equipment. Tom Brown, our board member here, may know more of the technical aspects on some of our restoration projects, but there's a lot of things in the works.
And is there, I haven't really heard of a place as extensive as this. How unique is this?
It, and again, Tom may have to help me, but we're definitely one of the largest train museums in the country. Tom's from California and has been to one of the biggest. What would you say, Tom, as far as our national ranking?
Well, I'd say we rank right up amongst the top up here. California's got a classier museum, but everything's like behind glass, behind ropes. You can't touch it. Where our museum is open and we're friendly to the people. We bring people up in the engines, we show, we explain. A lot of museums don't do that. That's something you see here. It's unique. We've had a lot of people tell us that they've been to all these different museums and it's kind of cold. When you walk in, you look, you're on your own, where we are friendly. That's right. Our biggest thing.
And so you play a big role in the restoration?
Yes, I work on the trains and restoration, and I also drive the trains on the weekends. We come down here, and we're usually around here about 8 o'clock on Saturday morning, getting the equipment ready to run for the day. And then we do our track inspections on Saturday, and then during the week, we just different projects we tackle on, we try to do. So we are working on all the time on something.
We started the tour with Hall explaining the history of the museum as we walked toward one of several diesel locomotives that are run on a small stretch of track.
It emerged from a group of enthusiasts associated with the University of Miami. You see, after the end of World War II, or near the end of World War II, this base was almost virtually destroyed in a hurricane, and the government never really rebuilt it. It was given to the University of Miami, and this became their South Campus. And some of these rail enthusiasts connected to the university started acquiring some old engines and things and stored it down here. One thing led to another, and by 57, it became a full-fledged museum.
We climbed the steps of a waiting engine, which Tom Bran, a board member and volunteer, runs on weekends.
This is a GP7 made by Electromotive Division. It does have some history. It was made for the U.S. Army. It served with the U.S. Army after the Army... It stayed in Army depots. After the Army got through and up to Alaska, served on the Alaska Railway, and then went down to Southern California to a private switching railroad. And then later on, when they made the movie Under Siege 2 with Steven Seagal, The Dark Territory, this was the lead locomotive in that movie. So if you're all ready, we'll go for a ride.
Do I need to just sit down?
Just sit down.
Okay. Track do you have here?
About a mile straight out that we use.
Now what you're taking is actually our cab ride. We offer these on weekends, approximately every half hour if we can. So this is actually one of the type of train rides that we offer.
Running at 10 miles an hour, we quickly reach the end of the museum's track, with the engine stopping where the rails meet another track.
CSX main line beside us, straight ahead, is Homestead, Florida City, 13 miles. You look out the train this way, there's 152nd Street. The road goes up, goes along 826, goes up by Miami Airport, turns with 836, goes across Miami Airport, or across Lejeune. Lejeune goes through Hialeah, through Miami. It goes right up 95 straight north. So this is actually the southernmost terminus for CSX right here.
Is this used very often by CSX?
CSX uses about 3 to 4 times a week. They haul about 8-10 cars down to Homestead, Florida City. But just north of 152nd here, there's a siding that goes off to the left, and it goes out to Chrome and Kendall, to the Rinker Rock Quarry at Chrome and Kendall. That's used a couple times a day, 7 days a week. So it is used out here.
Do y'all ever get on this track or?
No.
No.
You see out in front of the engine, you'll see a yellow switch stand on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
That's a derail switch. If we would go past that point, it would pick up our wheels and take us off to the side of the ground and put the train on the ground. We'd stay upright, but we'd be on the ground. That's the protector switch stayed ahead.
Right.
So if we want to get out to the main line, we just throw that derail switch. It just flips the piece off. And then if we had a key, we could unlock the switch, and you could just go as far as you wanted to go.
From there, the engine was put in reverse. As we headed back toward the museum, all discussed their two steam engines that used to run along Florida's east coast.
Well, you'll see a little bit further down here on this side, the 113. That's kind of like a sister locomotive to the 153. That was the other steam engine that was a Flagler engine that went to Key West. It's undergoing restoration right now. We have an old steam crane here that we just got some money for to do some work on. That's quite a remarkable piece.
Where does most of the money come from? Private donations, or do you get any federal money?
Officially, we get no government money. It's only been in the last, 15 months since I've come that we've really actively sought grants. We're starting to get some grants. But this is a private organization. We have a membership that's grown to about 600 members. But we desperately need assistance, not just volunteers, but financial assistance. We go out and we beat the bushes for the grants and solicit the foundations, but that money's still pretty lean since 9/11. So we have to just fly by the seat of our pants sometimes. And you can see the 113 there, that's almost, except for one private donation, that's almost been done with volunteer labor. And it in a year or so, will look like the 153 up front.
And this was another Flagler.
Yes. And I think that engine's actually just a little bit older than the 153. It's an old Pacific, like the 153. But that went all the way to Key West.
I imagine it must have been an incredible ride.
And both of those steam engines were eventually sold or acquired by U.S. Sugar, and I think they were used as switcher engines out in the cane fields, and that's how the museum acquired them in the 50s. So they didn't come direct from the Flagler Railroad. They were fortunately were given a, you know, adaptive reuse, or otherwise they would have been scrapped, you know, much earlier.
And the other side of this, the NASA switch engine?
That was used at Cape Canaveral for many, many years. That was the first engine used, so it was called NASA 1. It's quite a famous engine that was donated by NASA. There's a helium car that was used at the Cape hooked onto that that was also donated by NASA.
Does NASA still use trains in any way?
I believe they do. Tom was up there fairly recently. NASA still uses... They still have a engine like NASA 1, don't they?
Yes, they have several of them. They have their own railroad up there. Nobody else goes in there but them.
What do they move with it?
Actually brings a lot of the rockets in. The engines all come by rail.
Back under the Gold Coast Railroad Museum's train shed, we walk over to one of the steam locomotives.
This engine we're looking at right now, the 153, was the last steam engine out of the Keys before the hurricane destroyed the railroad.
That was in 1935 and would spell the end of trains running to Key West, with US 1 being built on the track bed.
This here is what they call a Pacific class engine. Two wheels front, which makes four little ones, six big ones, two. So it becomes a 4-6-2, which is a Pacific class locomotive. You can tell by the drivers. They're nice and high, which means this was a high-speed engine. This was a passenger train, mainly.
How fast could this go?
This 80 mile an hour for a steam engine. That was moving in its day, 80 mile an hour. There has been engines go up to 100, a steam engine like this type. Usually the bigger the driving wheels, the faster they go.
You're listening to WLRN's Topical Currents. I'm Michael Hiplin, touring the Gold Coast Railroad Museum in southwest Miami-Dade. The pride of its collection is the presidential rail car known as the Ferdinand Magellan. Museum Executive Director Michael Hall says it's the heaviest rail car ever made because of the thick bulletproof walls, ceiling, and glass.
Well, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Dwight Eisenhower used it. It was retired during Eisenhower's term. Herbert Hoover had ridden on it because prior to World War II, the car was rented out by the Pullman Company. There were six or seven called the Explorer series. They all had Explorer names. And, you know, movie stars, presidents, congressmen rented them out. But I guess after Pearl Harbor, the Secret Service wanted to donate one Pacific car to the president, customize it, armor plate it, protect it for, in that case, FDR. But Truman probably was most famous because he did his whistle stop campaign on this. That's how he won the presidency, from that back platform of the train there where he gave his speeches.
Can we go inside?
Yes,
sure.
Oh, yes.
It's interesting, and I don't know if anybody knows the entire story, but it was going to be acquired by the Smithsonian. It came up as surplus, and I think the Smithsonian bid $1 for it, kind of customary, but somebody, one of the early members down here, was savvy enough to understand the process, and I think they bid $100 for it. So luckily, the Gold Coast Railroad Museum got the Ferdinand Magellan here in Miami. And this was one of Miami's first national historic landmarks. This is on not only the National Register, but is designated a national historic landmark. And that's a big deal.
Board member Tom Brand took us through the sleeping quarters.
This was Roosevelt's stateroom here. And this was his wheelchair that was specially made for him on this train. This wheelchair stayed on the train so it can navigate the halls here. But this was his stateroom. And then Roosevelt and his wife shared this bath here. This was their joint bathroom together. Had a full shower and everything in here. Then his wife, this was her stateroom here. She had this stateroom. It was his wife's. And then the A stateroom was for another VIP that was traveling with him. So there was four staterooms plus a stateroom for the crew. So
doesn't look that big or that luxurious.
Well, in its day, this was very luxury. In its day, you know, I mean, we think of how things are now. But this here, this furniture you see, was the actual furniture in the car at the time that Roosevelt had it.
Wow.
And here's his most famous picture. Dewey defeats Truman. That was taken in St. Louis. St. Louis on the back of this car.
Wow. That's one of the most Famous presidential photos ever.
Yes.
Taken on the back of this car. Wow.
And here's some pictures of the train in service.
There actually was an elevator at one time on the back platform here for Roosevelt that was removed when Truman took over.
Yeah, this is the picture of it right here with a ramp with the elevator to get in.
Now, Reagan made an appearance on this car. The museum loaned it to Reagan. It was sent up to Ohio. And there's been other plans over the years. I understand that Clinton had intended to use the car, and it was going to be loaned for an appearance, but it just, because of, you know, war with Bosnia and different things happened, that never came about. But it's still available, I guess, technically, for a sitting president. You know, the museum, of course, would never deny it to a president to make an appearance on it.
Then this is the door, which is a came out of a bank. This was a vault door out of a bank. That's what they used. So, solid.
And wasn't this a submarine hatch?
Yes, this was a submarine hatch, and this was an emergency hatch to get out of here. The car land outside, you can open that up and get out. And there's one in his room, an escape hatch also on the floor to get out. So the president could get out of the car if he had to.
Another rail car on display at the Gold Coast Railroad Museum reflects a darker era of American history. We climbed on board what Brand says is one of only two segregated passenger rail cars left in the country.
It's exactly what the car was, horsehair, seats, everything. But what was neat about this car, I mean, it was a white section, depending on what section, which direction the train was going. If it was going forward, this was the white section. If it was going reverse, it would become the colored section.
That's the original sign.
Yes. Huh. And then this car is no different on the other side. It's just the exact same car. Nothing's changed, except it's got the rotating sign.
So was the white section was always the front section?
Right. The blacks never rode, and the black people didn't ride in front of the whites. They always rode behind the whites. So no matter which way the car was going, then you rotated that sign for that direction.
Amazing.
But when we give school tours, we bring the kids in here, and we let them sit in the seats, and then we kind of explain this story. And they're, of course, very surprised, but even a lot of the teachers, you know, of course, I mean, they know about, the teachers know about segregation, but it really doesn't sink in until they actually see an example of it, especially, you know, the younger teachers.
Hall says the rail car was built in 1912. Another relic from another, much more luxurious era of rail travel is a domed observation car, built in the 1940s, which was at the tail end of a train known as the California Zephyr. Brand says it ran across three different railroads between Chicago and Oakland, California.
This Silver Crescent was one of the California Zephyr cars. There's only six of these cars ever built in the United States. One was destroyed in service, so there were five left. And when Amtrak took over the railway system, passenger service, they did not want this car because you could not walk through to another car. It had to be a tail-end observation, so it was a tail-end observation, which was a unique car because of that. But the five was left. Liquid Sugar bought this car, the Silver Crescent, and they had it out in Colorado. They never changed it. They left it exactly intact. The other four that were sold were gutted out and remodified. So this is the last of the original six that's still intact. Go up, by all means.
All right.
Now this was a mural done in 47. It's still here. So all the other cars have had everything gutted out and replaced, but this has stayed intact, so.
Was this the lounge, or?
This was one of the lounges, yes. And something you don't see today, this was the smoking section of the car. This was the smoker section. And then up here you have the observation where you get to go up there and sit and look out.
The seats do show some damage, which Executive Director Hall says occurred in 1992 when Hurricane Andrew caused the original train shed to fall on top of the cars.
This car was almost in pristine condition before Andrew. A lot of the damage, the windows and whatever in the seats has been since Andrew. It's really a shame because I guess it was the man who, he's still around, that he really takes care of this car, says it was in mint condition.
Well, still something that still see that it's original. Great carpet.
Yeah.
The museum plans to use a donation to replace the fabric of the seats using original materials. Restoration work like that is always ongoing at the Gold Coast Railroad Museum, which is often visited by young children. Learn about the important role railroads played in the development of our country and the establishment of cities in Florida more than a century ago. One of the most popular features for them is a massive model railroad collection, which Hall says is maintained by a senior citizen named Floyd McEachern.
This is his life's work. He has collected this stuff for over 50 years. He donated this stuff and built these tables and donated his collection. I mean, there's tens and tens of thousands of dollars here. He has restored Lionel engines from the 1920s, you know, American Flyer stuff. And, you know, every scale is represented here.
McEachern loves showing his collection to kids.
We get them in here by the hundreds. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, we had 150 kindergarten kids in here.
Oh,
I mean, they didn't
crazy.
Come all at once, but once they got in here, they didn't want to leave.
For the Gold Coast Railroad Museum to survive, Executive Director Hall says it will need to continue exposing new generations to railroading.
We're trying to, you know, teach them about what it was like to ride on a train just 30, 40, 50 years ago. That was an important part of American life. And you know, most of the kids that have come here have not even ridden on a train, let alone in some cases even seen a train up close. So it's quite an experience for them.
And he says they have big plans for the future that also involve neighboring Metro Zoo and a future water park.
We're going to actually submit a bond, general obligation bond issue line item that will hopefully fund running a narrow gauge train ride out of our facility onto the overall area of the Miami Zoo, the new water park that will be the first entity in the master plan to be constructed. And we hope to supplement that with a roundhouse here in the property to support the train ride and also provide us with a theater and additional storage, inside storage space for valuable, you know, rolling stock. And we, you know, we've had a number of meetings with the Parks Department, with Commissioner Moss to help, you know, find out how we can play a meaningful role in the overall master plan.
So the county has been supportive, though?
They've been, the Parks Department, since I've come, I felt has been very supportive of us, and we've tried to support them because I think it's a great relationship because this is really their land, and these are our cars, and I think we all work together real well.
When do you see that happening?
The master plan? As I understand, the water park was to begin this year, but there's some additional catches. It's going to happen. It's just slowly happening. Mm-hmm. And there's still, I think, a lot of things, you know, details to be worked out. You know, every week you read about parts of it, but it'll happen.
There are, of course, plenty of other items beyond those we've toured here, including a vintage Seaboard passenger dining car, a Southern Pacific sleeper car, as well as a U.S. Army hospital car. The Gold Coast Railroad Museum is open every day at 152nd Street beside Metro Zoo in Southwest Miami-Dade. For Topical Currents, I'm Michael Hiblin, WLRN Herald News.
We'll be back with more Topical Currents in just a minute.